Welcome to Health Cetera. I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of this program that's brought to you by the Center for Health Media and Policy at Hunter College, City University of New York. And I'm joined today by my colleague and co-producer, Kenya Beard. Kenya, great to be with you again.
Likewise, Diana. We're going to have an exciting show today.
And before we get into the show, though, I want to just remind listeners that this is the fundraising marathon for WBAI, Keep Us on the Air, and that you can do that by calling during this next hour, anytime during this next hour, call 212-209-2950. And if you do that and make a donation of $50 or more, you'll get a very special premium that you're going to hear more about throughout today's program called it's a book called Just Medicine, A Cure for Racial Inequality in American Healthcare, published by NYU Press in 2015. And the author is Dr. Dana Bowen-Mathieu. And we're going to be talking with her today on Health Style. So again, and we only have 10 copies of that book. They're only going to be offered during this hour. So if you want to get a copy of that book, make sure to call 212-209-2950 during the next hour. And just a reminder, we take American Express, MasterCard, Visa, all the major credit cards. And we welcome you calling in at 212-209-2950. Or going online at WBAI.org, and you can sign up for this premium there. So don't wait. Go to your phones, but also keep that radio on and listen. So let me turn this over now to Kenya Beard. Go, Kenya.
So, Diana, today we have a very special show. We're going to take a closer look at healthcare disparities, the differences in the quality of care that some groups receive. Now, my question is, why is it that low-income groups and racial and ethnic minorities tend to have poorer health care outcomes as compared to whites? Typically, when a person seeks medical attention, they are told what they either need to do or what they need to stop doing. So they might be told they need to exercise more or eat healthier, stop smoking, lose weight. If you don't get better, you might begin to believe that your actions or lack of actions are the sole reason for your condition. Mm. But what if your condition is due to something your healthcare provider is or is not doing? What if you're being treated differently because of your race or your income? Back in 2003, the landmark report, Unequal Treatment, Confronting Racial and Ethnic Disparities in Healthcare, by the authors Medley, Stith, and Nelson, they reveal that some minorities receive a lower quality of care and experience worse healthcare outcomes as a result. And since Unequal Treatment, hundreds of studies have corroborated the fact that racial inequalities do indeed exist in healthcare, and differences in outcomes have been attributed to a variety of factors, and mainly these differences are with access and the quality of care. But why is the quality of care different based on the color of your skin or your income? Why is it that if I enter the emergency room with chest pain, I might not be treated as aggressively as someone who is white? Well, recently, the literature has exposed a contributing factor that is quite disconcerting, and it's gaining a lot of attention. And that factor is unconscious bias, also known as implicit bias. And joining us today to help us better understand unconscious bias is Dr. Dana Bowen-Mathieu. Dana is a professor of law at University of Colorado Law School and the Colorado School of Public Health. She serves on the faculty of the Center for Bioethics and Humanities. She is also the co-founder of the Colorado Health Equity Project. This is an organization to form medical legal partnerships and remove barriers to good health for low-income clients. Dana, welcome to Health Cetera.
Kenya, what a pleasure it is to be with you. Thank you so much.
Dana, I am so glad you are here. You just published your book, Just Medicine, A Cure for Racial Inequality in American Healthcare. And by the way, I love your play on words. Your title, Just Medicine, does not mean just or simply medicine. Rather, it's about justice in healthcare and the need for a just legal standard. So I want to tell the listeners that for $50, they can become a member of WBAI and receive a free copy of your book that is so insightful. It is provocative, courageous. It exemplifies your willingness to explore the intersection of unconscious bias and disparities in healthcare. You also set the stage for intentional dialogues on racism, and you use your legal lens to expose and mitigate racial discrimination in a way that is brilliantly insightful. Tell our listeners what compelled you to write this book.
Well, thank you for those compliments, Kenya. I was compelled both by my own experience as a patient, as the wife of a physician, and as a scholar. For many years, the study that you described in your wonderful introduction, the confronting the unequal treatment study, documented the existence of disparities that are absolutely deadly. We know from studies done by David Satcher and others that over 84,000 people die needlessly each year because of health disparities. So the size of this problem and the fact that since that study in 2003 was published, we have made very little progress removing disparities, that solely would be enough. But I add to that my experience as an African-American woman with unconscious bias, my experience watching my husband, who is a physician, and his colleagues with unconscious bias. All three of those things combined to compel me to write this book.
So, Dana, this is Diana. Can you share a story of your own experience that might bring this alive for listeners who are trying to understand the idea?
Sure, I can. When I started trying to spread my wings as a teenager and go to the doctor by myself, this was a very formative time for me. It was my first opportunity to exercise the liberty of going to the doctor. My parents had helped me choose the doctor, and we had lots of communication about what I was going for. It was a regular checkup. But I appear at the doctor's office, and it was an OB, GYN, just regular annual physical. And this for a 16, 17, 18-year-old, I think I was somewhere in that neighborhood, you know, it's a brave new world for me. And I sit down, and all I got from the doctor was very cursory, flippant kinds of inquiries. I know now, looking back, that the criticism this doctor gave me, and I have to tell you, I didn't expect this question. I'm sad to say it was a woman doctor. She looked at me and she goes, "Did you know this was bigger than that? You have a this and you have a that. I'm assuming this is true of you and that is not true of you." As I look back on that experience, Diana, I realize now that she, A, judged me for being a black teenager coming by herself to an OBGYN appointment. She thought I was seeking birth control, right?
Wow.
I was seeking independence. I was seeking self-determination. I was seeking strength and responsibility. And I left feeling small, to say the least.
Wow.
Sure.
And by the way, I wasn't seeking birth control.
Just for your mom,
I won't
right?
ask whether you should have been.
My mom would be happy about that.
Wow. So, Dana, it's so hard. I'm a nurse practitioner, and you know, most healthcare providers, we're caring and altruistic. And I think it's difficult for some providers to accept that there's a lack of congruency between their intentions to help, deliberate intentions to help, and the fact that they can be performing actions that are harmful. So how do you help to respond to the suggestion of cognitive dissonance?
It's a great question for two reasons. One, the studies are pretty clear that you don't have to be an intentional racist or prejudiced or a bigot in order to act negatively towards your patients. In fact, there is a study that is of particular interest when thinking about your question, and it's a study by Lewis Penner about aversive racism. And by that I mean someone who really intends, like most physicians, most nurses, most PAs, most healthcare providers, they intend to be egalitarian, equal, caring, objective caregivers. That's their intention. However, if their explicit intentions contradict or are different from their implicit biases, it turns out that they have the most dangerous combination where patient treatment is concerned. That pairing of explicit fairness and the intention to be equal with a very high implicit bias is the kind of pairing that patients of color react most negatively to and get the worst treatment from.
You know, I have to share with you, my husband has been in the healthcare system recently, and he is African American, and he went to an appointment with the surgeon, and he had put on these pants that had a hole in the knee. And I got on his case about them, and he thought I was, you know, just wanting him to just dress up for the surgeon. And I said, no, what you don't understand is if they think you're poor, they're going to treat you even more differentially. I mean, there is the bias out there. And so you're black, but if you're poor on top of it, you're not going to get the same treatment.
And Diana, that's straight from the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality back in 2013. They reported that blacks and Hispanics receive worse care than whites for about 40% of quality measures, and that people who were poor receive worse care than high-income people for about 60% of quality measures. So when you combine poor and minority, you're absolutely right. So did your husband change his pants?
The next time, yes.
It's true, but isn't it true in all of our experience that implicit bias affects many walks of life? The problem in healthcare is that it's deadly.
Yeah.
The problem is that implicit bias in healthcare, when our providers don't acknowledge that they are treating, that they are evaluating, that they're even communicating differently with their patients of color, then it turns out to really affect how long and how well you live.
So, Dana, your opponents are going to argue and say, look, we have the Civil Rights Act of 64, we have Title VI, we're not allowed to discriminate on the base of race or color. And in your book, you actually speak to how Title VI has actually been neutralized because of the complexity of discrimination. Can you explain Title VI and what you meant by bad law makes bad health?
I can. Title VI of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 is a landmark piece of legislation that has done a wonderful job of removing segregation from our healthcare system. Now, segregation is the result of explicit bias or prejudice. So where black wards were separated from white wards, where people were by race explicitly forbidden from entering a facility, those types of prejudices were the way that people behaved in 1964 when that act has passed. We have changed as a society, and the prejudice and the race bias that occurs today is very different. Our behavior is not explicitly racist, it is implicitly racist. And all I'm asking is that the law change with our behavior. Since our behavior now reflects more of an unconscious and unintentional bias and discrimination, the current prohibition, which is in Title VI, that says no person shall be denied the benefits or the privileges of anything that is federally funded based on race, color, or national origin is not enough. It's just not enough to prohibit intentional discrimination anymore. Why? It doesn't occur as frequently. It's not that simple anymore. Now that we are in a society that, for the most part, really abhors intentional discrimination, believe it or not, polls show that people do not like explicit racial prejudice. However, we do see that polls also show that we have an overwhelming anti-black, anti-Latino, anti-Asian bias implicitly, and the law should now reflect that as well.
So you suggest, as a result, that the legal system should impose liability for unconscious discrimination, and that Title VI should actually be reformed. So I have two questions. First, how do you propose that institutions identify and resolve the subtleties of a less overt form of discrimination? And secondly, you know, there's a provision in the Affordable Care Act of 2010 that specifically prohibits discrimination in healthcare. So how adequate is Section 1557 of the ACA in prohibiting discrimination in healthcare and actually changing structural inequities?
Wow, those are both great questions. Let me take them in turn. If we were to change Title VI the way I suggest, what we would do is add a reasonableness provision. Simply put, that would ask institutions that accept federal dollars to do what is reasonable based on the evidence to combat implicit bias. So liability would only be imposed if the institution could not show that they took evidence-based reasonable steps to address implicit bias. So now to your question, how would they identify it? They would identify it by the data. They would identify it by the outcomes. They would identify it by the absence of actual evidence that they acted reasonably to combat the inequities that are showing in their data. So, for example, many institutions would be subject to this could look at the patient satisfaction level. They could look at the treatment levels. They could look at the access to treatments of choice. If they didn't see that there was equal access and that the outcomes that they would expect to see equalized in patient racial groups were in fact equal, then they could take those steps, that they could take the evidence-based steps to address those inequalities. Let me give you a specific example. Cancer is a disease that we all unfortunately have had experience with. The cancer data by race and ethnicity tells us that blacks and Latinos are over 33% more likely to die from most forms of cancer than whites. So that data the institution would have. They would then ask themselves, does that come from an inequity in treatment? Well, it turns out that the data generally shows us that blacks and Latinos are diagnosed less early than whites are. So the institution could look at their diagnostic patterns. Further, the data also tells us that once diagnosed, blacks and Latinos who have cancer receive less intensive interventions. That is another form of data that an individual institution could look at. What is the institution's level of intensity for treating blacks, whites, Latinos, all races, when they have these various forms of cancer? The reason I pick cancer, Kenya, is because when intensity of treatment, early diagnosis, and education are equalized, the death and survival rates from cancer are absolutely equal by race and ethnicity.
Right. No, you're absolutely right about that. And there's another study that the VA actually did that examined racial disparities. But even though they saw differences in how providers treated the African-American men, and they saw that less information was given to them so that they can make informed choices, they said that there were also differences in the treatment patterns and the diabetic testing. But the VA study said they couldn't establish a cause and effect. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I know in your book you talk about that double feedback where not only are providers biased, but patients are biased too.
I have to admit that not only are providers biased, but patients are biased because bias affects us all. Can I talk just for a minute about how implicit bias works and how we become biased? Because
definitely,
I think that'll help us all understand.
Dana, before you do, let me just remind mm-hmm. listeners that you're listening to HealthCetera on WBAI 99.5 FM New York. I'm Diana Mason. I'm here with Kenya Beard, co-producer, and we're talking with Dana Bowen Matthew about Unconscious Bias in Healthcare, and we're offering her book as a premium. It's called Just Medicine, A Cure for Racial Inequality in American Healthcare, published by NYU Press. So for $50, you can call 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. And get a copy of that book and become a member of WBAI, or go online at WBAI.org. That's WBAI.org. So, Dana, go ahead.
Thank you, Diana. Implicit bias is a negative attitude. It's a negative assumption about another group of people being inferior to, let's say, whites is the reference group to whites. That happens automatically, right? You have these implicitly, that is invisible or unconsciously, negative thoughts about a racial group, a person who's a member of a racial group, and you don't even realize that you're having them. So let me compare that to explicit bias, and I'll use myself again as an example. As an African-American woman, I can remember the last time somebody used the N-word to me. I can remember, frankly, just about every time somebody has actually used that invective, speaking it directly to me, right? So I'm standing on a street corner, and I won't say the city because it could have been any city, and a carload of young men came by. I'm going to assume they were inebriated, frankly, for their own benefit, and they just yelled the N-word to me and a few other things besides, right? They didn't know me.
Right.
They didn't know who I was. They just looked at the color of my skin. That is explicit racism, right? So that leaves me with a feeling of anger. It leaves me with a feeling of sadness, and it leaves me with a feeling of rejection.
Sure.
I'm a patient now. I'm the same African-American woman. I go into a physician's office, and certainly that physician's not going to use any of those types of words. That's not going to be my experience. But I am looking at the physician shift uncomfortably in their seat as they're speaking to me. I'm looking at the physician and they're not making eye contact back. I'm having the impression that this physician is actually rushing and trying to get me out of the room, or perhaps not giving me straight answers where the content of the answers are intended to educate me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm having a feeling that I'm getting an experience because of my race. Now, that also leaves me angry. That also leaves me feeling rejected. But it wasn't explicit bias. It was implicit bias. And even if it wasn't, and here's the point of my book, even if it wasn't, my bias about that physician makes me assume that it was racism. Mm-hmm. It makes me, as a patient, decide I'm not sure I want to come back. And
right.
As a nurse, you know that will affect my continuity of care.
Right. It could also affect your adherence to the plan if you don't trust the provider.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I might think to myself, why should I pay attention to what that person says? They don't have my best interest in heart. And I did a lot of interviews for this book, and that was one of the things that came out most clearly. Especially among African Americans, if we as a group of people feel that we have been treated with bias, we're simply not going to seek care from that provider or maybe any provider for that particular need anymore. And that is a contributor to disparities, I would argue.
Sure, sure. Wow.
So I guess one of the funniest stories that I remember one patient telling me was, it was a guy, he not only stopped going to the doctor, and I know this patient pretty well because by the time he became a patient of my husband's, he was so far out of compliance on all of his comorbidities. If he's listening, he knows exactly who he is. But he went on a campaign to tell everybody not to go to this doctor anymore, any person of color anymore. So he told the president of the university where he was teaching. He told his neighbor, he told his daughter, this doctor lost probably 50% of their African-American population.
Wow.
Because they perceived that they had been treated with bias, and whether they were or not might have been their own implicit bias, but that's how I think those patient biases contribute to poor healthcare.
So, Dana, let me ask you a question about this. So as you're describing how a physician, might behave, and that you believe that it's because you're African American or because you're poor, there's a piece of me that thinks, well, but maybe that's just the physician. Maybe it's not directed towards you. So what do you, and you said that you know, regardless of whether there was implicit bias there, that you, if you walk away with this feeling that there's bias in the encounter, then that's what matters. So how do you, what do you do with that, though? What do you do with the idea of you've got your own experience, but if you saw that physician with another patient who was white and wealthy, they might react, they might be the same way just because, you know, he's on the spectrum and has some Asperger's syndrome and can't really relate to people.
Sure.
You know, what do you do with that? How do you reconcile that?
So that's a great question. I think a couple of things in response. One, this is a systemic problem, and we're very, very clear on its impact. Mm-hmm. The fact that we could, in 2003, identify over 600 studies that describe not only the disparities that African Americans, Latino Americans, Asian Americans especially, and Native Americans are experiencing in this country makes this a problem that we have to use all of our resources to address. So the severity of the problem means we have to be very committed. So if we look at this only as an individual one-on-one problem, this physician might have bad communication skills or that physician may have been rushed, then we are, I think, taking the problem much less seriously from the systemic level than we should. Mm. The fact is that institution after institution is going to be able to show at this stage, sadly, the kind of inequities in outcomes that we now know are associated with implicit biases on a population level, on a systemic level. And that was the importance of the research that we gathered for this book. The importance was that we could see over and over again in what I describe as six different mechanisms, whether it was perceptions or communication or treatment and diagnostic decisions, a connection between implicit bias and poor health outcomes, right? So we can no longer just say one physician here might have had a bad day or one patient there might have read this incorrectly. No. As a society, indeed as a healthcare system, but I would argue even as a society, we have to reckon with the structural nature of the problem that implicit bias represents for poor health outcomes and disparities.
So I'm glad you're saying that we need to look at the structure, because we can all agree that everyone has biases, unconscious, conscious biases, they exist. But how do we create a law if we're not 100% sure that we can, you know, change the biases? Are they actually malleable? Where is the literature that says that we can change them?
Well, here was what I call one of the dirtiest little secrets that I uncovered in this research, and that is the answer to your question is absolutely yes. Implicit biases, unconscious racism is malleable. That's the sociological term for we can do something about this. So at an individual level, the excuse has always been these are automatic thoughts. They are unconscious thoughts. They are unintentional thoughts. They occur at a level that is inaccessible, and therefore we can do nothing about it. Another argument has been that these are ubiquitous thoughts. Everybody has them. What are we going to do about something that everybody suffers? Well, it turns out, lo and behold, that there is almost 25 years worth of literature that tells us that we indeed can do something about implicit biases. We can change the social norm. That's why I ask for legal changes. So let me just tell you about a particular study that is one of many collected during this 25-year period that tells us we can actually do something about implicit biases. And it was a study of college students who were first tested for their explicit biases, that is, are they prejudiced, divided into groups, yes and no, some were and some weren't. And then they were told, some, that there were lots of their peers who agreed with their prejudice, so that they thought the social norm was consistent with their prejudice, and others were told that the social norm was inconsistent, that some 80% of their peers disagreed with them. That study showed that just by changing the atmospheric social norm, people made different decisions. And you see, this is what law does. I don't think for a minute that changing the law is going to make enough lawsuits that we will get rid of liability through litigation. No. I think changing the law is going to change the social norm so that we know what is acceptable to our society, that our law expresses a disdain and distaste and non-tolerance of implicit bias, so that after that, other institutions will rise to the occasion and change.
Well, I know in your book you talk about stereotype negation training and how it works and how people who have been through this program, they do, or they're at least more aware of their biases, and they can do something to mitigate them before they act on them.
Sure. And that, Kenya, would be one of the things that a institution, if it was held accountable to doing what is reasonable, would engage in. They would look at their data, see the inequitable outcomes, and then they would require their providers to engage in stereotype negation. So what is stereotype negation? It is a training that deprograms bias. The sociologist calls it debiasing. But what it does essentially, I like to liken to a habit change. I'm using myself as an example in a lot of these instances because I can criticize myself and know what I mean by that. I used to be a really bad driver, meaning I would speed. When I was practicing law in Virginia, I would speed up and down the road to go to hearings and litigation, and I got speeding ticket after speeding ticket after speeding ticket. That was my habit, Kenya. It was my habit to drive fast. It was my habit to break the law. And finally, the law caught up with me, labeled me a habitual offender, and taught me and sent me to a course where I had to be trained out of that habit, right? Stereotype negation training does something similar. It deprograms your bad habits. Now, if you understand implicit bias is a habit that you've developed over a long period of time, remember I said it was automatic. Why is it automatic? Because it comes from all of the social information that you have received throughout your entire life.
Right, definitely.
So it comes from the news programs, the way African Americans are portrayed in the movies, the music that you hear, the stories that your friends tell you, the fears you pick up from your family. All of this is social knowledge that feeds and fuels your unconscious and automatic thoughts. That's a habit.
Definitely.
So social negation retrains that habit.
Definitely. So let's go back to the question that I had before about the Affordable Care Act of 2010 and the fact that Section 1557 prohibits discrimination in health care. Do you feel that's enough?
That is an excellent section, new language that is a civil rights provision particularly addressing health care discrimination. The Affordable Care Act contains 62 provisions that address health disparities, and this is one of the most powerful. It takes Title VI to a new level. It takes the anti-discrimination provisions of existing law to a new level. However, it remains to be seen how Section 1557 will actually be implemented. Okay. If Section 1557 addresses unconscious bias as well as conscious bias, it will be sufficient. It will, in fact, be excellent for the purpose at hand. I have reason to believe, though, Kenya, sadly, that it will not.
Why is that?
Oh, I have two reasons to believe that. First, the regulations that have been published by the Department of Health and Human Services don't contain any prohibition against disparate impact particularly and don't specifically address unconscious bias. I'm very saddened by this, and of course, along with many others, we've been lobbying and advocating for the Department of Health and Human Services to actually treat unconscious bias or unconscious racism as a part of the behavior that's prohibited. But let me go further and tell you that because Title VI has been interpreted by the Supreme Court not to address unconscious bias, in fact, not even to allow private parties to sue for disparate impact, it really is still my view that the statute, Title VI, should change as well as 1557 and its regulations. So I would say we have still got some work to do, both with Section 1557's regulations and the way it will be enforced, and with Title VI, the statute itself.
So, Dana, this has been a fascinating discussion. And it, I immediately, you know, my head goes to a number of other questions, but we've got to pitch and do some fundraising around for this radio station. And but I just quickly want to ask, so all this talk about repealing the Affordable Care Act, would that be a major step back then for civil rights advancements in terms of health care that the Affordable Care Act provides?
Repealing the Affordable Care Act, in my opinion, would be a major 100 steps back. I could almost say it would be 18 million steps back, because that's the number of people at last count who have now got health insurance access who did not have access before the Affordable Care Act. Remember I said earlier there are 62 provisions that I count in the Affordable Care Act that are particularly addressing disparities, health disparities on a racial, ethnic, and socioeconomic basis. So the Affordable Care Act is the best step forward that we've made for civil rights in health care since 1964, when the Civil Rights Act of 1964 was passed.
Well, this is all fascinating, and I want to just point out to listeners that we've been talking with Dr. Dana Bowen-Mathieu. She is the professor of law at University of Colorado Law School and the Colorado School of Public Health. She's the author of the book that we're offering for the next, let's see, it's about 20 minutes here, for as a premium for becoming a member of WBAI. The book is called Just Medicine, A Cure for Racial Inequality in American Healthcare, published by NYU Press. And you can get a copy of that book by calling 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. And we need people right now to show their support of this radio station for bringing you this kind of program and these kind of important discussions on radio. I want to point out that Dr. Kenya Beard, our co-producer here on HealthCetera, has been doing a number of programs for HealthCetera on health disparities and what are the issues related to health disparities. And Kenya, and just for people to go to the phone again, 212-209-2950. We take MasterCard, American Express, Visa, all the major credit cards. You can also make a pledge and send in your money later. You can also go online at WBAI.org. We prefer the credit card right now, whether on the phone or online, 212-209-2950. And Kenya, you've told me about your reading of this book and how important it was to you. Say a little bit about that.
Oh, my goodness. This book is awesome. It is a must read for CNOs, CEOs, diversity officers, healthcare providers, and individuals, because the biases don't necessarily have to just be in healthcare. We all have biases, like Dana, you know, stated. And I love the fact that she explains what implicit bias is. She uses the social science to support that biases are malleable. And then she gives us, through her legal lens, how we can actually change the law, reform Title VI, and really make a difference. Healthcare disparities have been around forever, and we have spent trillions of dollars and lost trillions of lives over the time, you know, and we need a solution. We need a solution that's based on the evidence. And Dana is pioneering this case for changing Title VI and making sure that people are more aware of it. And before we end, I just want, Dana, just share two sentences. What can our listeners do to combat unconscious racism in healthcare?
If your listeners are patients, the most important thing you can do is be involved in shared and active decision-making with your provider, so that your provider sees you as an individual and that you take part in making sure that you get the most information and the best information and the best care possible. If you're a provider, the studies show that if you will acknowledge that you, too, are a victim of implicit bias, just merely acknowledging it will begin to change your treatment patterns. If you're an institutional provider, if you can begin to set the social norm around your institution, not just to combat racism, but to combat unintentional implicit bias as well, then I think we'll see a movement and a reduction of health disparities.
And
Well said.
And
well said.
Again, to get to read more about Dr. Dana Bowen Matthews' perspectives on these issues and what you can do about it, you can call in now, and for $50, the premium we're offering just for the next few minutes is Just Medicine, A Cure for Racial Inequality in American Healthcare. And you can call 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. Or go to WBAI.org and you can get that premium online. And Dana, I wanted listeners to hear from you. This is very special. And listeners, this is about the impact of this radio station, WBAI, and how important it is to the growth and development of all of us. And Dana, you shared with us that you used to live in New York and were a listener to WBAI. Share that story with our listeners.
Well, I was a avid listener, is the irony. I mean, Dr. Beard's program is, of course, it's groundbreaking, it's phenomenal, and so more recently, this reuniting with WBAI has been spectacular. But I realized when I was a kid, in my middle school, early teen years, I had a transistor radio. So now your listeners know how old I am. A little transistor radio that I used to fall asleep with, and I just listened to WBAI talk radio every night. So I would hear these programs that would ignite my interest in social justice and my interest in political issues and my interest in being a part of the discourse. And that really shaped the way, I believe, my thinking and my values developed over time. So right now I'm in Washington, D.C., working on health policy. My whole direction in my career has been towards social justice generally, but particularly in health policy, and I believe the WBAI played a part in that. So this was a really special opportunity for me to talk to Kenya.
Awesome.
And again, call 212-209-2950. Make a donation to this station. You've heard from Dana Bowen Matthew why this station is so important. It is about the development of people's minds and their passions and, you know, developing those passions for social justice. And this is the Peace and Social Justice Station. That's what we call it. So it is alternative radio. It's non-commercial. And to keep that kind of radio on the air, we need your support. Whether you want this premium or one of the other generic premiums or a whole host of other premiums that you can be getting, and you can ask the telephone person or go online and look at the other premiums, but just make a donation to this station at 212-209-2950 or WBAI.org. And again, for the next few minutes, we are offering as a special premium just during this Health Cetera program, Dr. Dana Bowen Matthews' book, Just Medicine, A Cure for Racial Inequality in American Healthcare. That's for $50, and you become a member, most importantly, a member of WBAI, and you support this radio station and keeping it on the air and keeping another voice on the air. So go to your phones and call 212-209-2950. So, Dana, you grew up in New York and listened. Did your parents listen to WBAI?
I think they did. I think it might have been because I had their permission to listen, and I had the kind of parents that I don't think they would have just let me just listen to any old thing. So they must have known. I mean, I'm not exaggerating. This is amazing to be talking to WBAI. It would be every night. I'd lay in bed and I'd listen to. I wish I could remember the name of it. There was a pair of commentators who would speak and take calls, and I wasn't allowed to get up and get out of bed and call, but I could listen as long until I fell asleep.
Wow.
And So, yeah, peace and social justice has been a part of my life, I think, because of WBAI and other things since I was in middle school.
Well, this has been fabulous, and we greatly appreciate it. I want to point out that you're donating books to the station, your books. We have 10 copies of that book, Just Medicine, A Cure for Racial Inequality in American Healthcare. For $50, you can become a member of the station and get that premium or get one of the other premiums if you'd like. Just what's really important right now is that you, if you've not already made a donation, you do so right now at 212-209-2950 or go online at WBAI.org. That's WBAI.org. And I want to also thank Kenya Beard, who's a fairly new co-producer of Health Styles. And this is the kind of programming that, Kenya, you've been bringing to HealthCetera and to the listeners on WBAI, which I think has been a fabulous series of programs. Share with some of the listeners some of the people that you've interviewed and what we've been talking about.
So we've been focusing on healthcare disparities for over a year now, and last year we started with looking at healthcare disparities and the social determinants of health, and we looked at hypertension. And around that time, we were thinking about African-American mothers who had African-American sons and what it must be like for them every time their son leaves the house, and what effect does that have, the fear because of racism, what does that do to an individual and how that affects their health? Mm-hmm. And then we had someone else come on who discussed internal thoughts about racism and how that also, you know, it affects you on a physical level. Mm-hmm. It increases cortisol levels when you stress, and that increases your risk for diabetes and hypertension, and how for years, for decades, we've always focused on what minority groups were or were not doing. Mm-hmm. And we never really looked at what we as providers could be doing to contribute to these disparities. And over the last years, and again, with that landmark report on unequal treatment and looking at, you know what, there is something here. And it was something that was so negative, no one wanted to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, it was hard to believe that as providers, we could be part of the problem. Mm-hmm. But as Dana's book points out, showing all of the literature, her book has a wealth of information about different studies that have shown that provider bias, implicit bias, is real. And the biggest thing is that it's malleable, that you can do something about it. She dedicates a whole chapter in her book about just ending bias and what you need to do as an individual to first recognize it and then consciously, like Dana said, when she was retraining her brain on how not to engage in habits that were negative. And there's a way to do that. And now I'm seeing more and more that people, because we do want to be part of a just movement, we want equity, we want to be fair. For the most part, we understand that it's more than equality. Equality has been blurred so much that people think equality just means 50-50, so we've had to move away from that term and start saying, okay, it's not equality because it's not a matter of 50-50. It's a matter of equity. It's a matter of meeting people at their level of need and understanding what you might be doing to contribute to negative outcomes.
And again,
I know it's difficult. I know it's a difficult topic. It's a difficult pill to swallow, but thank goodness we've had so many people before us who have done these studies, these remarkable studies, and the evidence is there.
So 212-209-2950 is the number to call to get a copy of the book by Dana Bowen-Mathieu called Just Medicine, A Cure for Racial Inequality in American Healthcare. That's 212-209-2950. We do take Visa, MasterCard, American Express, all the major credit cards. And you can call that number now, 212-209-2950, and they will take your information. And we only have 10 copies of this book, and we're a few minutes more, it's not going to be available. So go to your phones right now, 212-209-2950. And I just want to ask before we wrap up here, Dr. Dana Bowen, Matthew, the author of that book and our guest today, thank you so much for coming on today, Dana. And I want to ask you, and then maybe Kenya could comment on it. So the pushback that Black Lives Matter is getting from some sectors of our society, what's your reaction to that?
I align myself with Black Lives Matter in, I would like to think, and I think it's a little presumptuous since I haven't spoken to the organizers, but I would like to think that they would welcome Just Medicine as a part or an extension of what they have inspired. Black health matters. Black health care matters. And if Black lives matter, then healthcare must change in order to reflect the value of Black lives. So I align myself with the Black Lives Matter movement. I applaud so much of the heightened awareness that they have brought. And let me just say, because I hear my husband's voice in the background, he's not actually in the room, but he's a provider, like the ones that Kenya was referring to earlier on, who are well-intentioned. And he would say, what would be different about me if I was not an unconsciously biased provider? What would I do differently? Well, something that Kenya said in her her review of the excellent programming over the course of the year and in her really great introduction reminded me that so many people think that the disparities Black, Latino, people of color, people who are poor suffer is because of their own behavior.
Yeah.
They think it's because they don't eat right, they don't exercise enough, they smoke too much, they drink too much. I've even heard a physician once say they should stop having children, right?
Oh,
this is an attitude that does not reflect the kind of changes physicians would make if they understood their biases.
Mm-hmm.
If they understood that the entire environment surrounding a person who is poor fights against them exercising, fights against their food security, fights against them having a life that would allow them to engage in healthy behavior, then that physician, because he or she was aware of their biases, could cooperate with the patient to engage them in a whole and comprehensive address to their health disparities, to their poor health outcomes. It would accommodate their limitations on food security. In fact, some physicians might begin to advocate for food security.
Hmm.
You are getting a long answer because I'm really passionate about this.
Yes.
DC right now.
That's
one of the things I'm working on is the Flint lead contamination crisis. I want to tell you that Flint, Michigan has no supermarkets in the city limits. That is no chain supermarkets that sell fresh vegetables and fresh fruit. So there's no access to produce.
That
do you see
horrible.
What I mean by suggesting that a population which has no access to healthy food would be culpable for not eating well if they were told to do so by their doctors?
Yeah.
So a doctor who has now understood their own biases and now understood what poor people, Black people in Flint, Michigan face would become a doctor. This is a saying I heard from Dr. Mickey Lurie, who is just an amazing advocate. She said, I can't be a doctor to a person if I'm not a doctor to their community.
That's right.
I have to be a doctor to
it.
The entire community. And if that is all we get out of training people not to be biased, then I think we will win.
212-209-2950 is the number to make a donation to this station and support these kinds of conversations. Where else are you hearing these kinds of conversations? They are so important to the health of our nation, to the health of communities, health of individuals and families. And that you were just listening to Dr. Dana Bowen Matthew, who is the author of the book that we're offering just for the next couple minutes, called Just Medicine, A Cure for Racial Inequality in American Healthcare. Healthcare by NYU Press. It's a fabulous book for everybody to raise our consciousness about what we need to do to try to end this unconscious bias that is influencing dramatically health outcomes for people. So go to your phone now and call 212-209-2950. We only have a couple minutes left. 212-209-2950, or go to WBAI.org and you can make a donation online and get that premium online. But 212-209-2950. Most importantly, it gets you membership in WBI, and if you're already a member, it gets you more support. We welcome your support for this radio station that is non-commercial, that is alternative radio, that is the peace and justice station, social justice station. And you've heard today from both my colleague, my co-producer, Kenya Beard, and from Dana Bowen-Matthew, our guest today, about how social justice plays out in terms of health and health care. And it's an incredibly important issue. And Dr. Dana Bowen-Matthew, I want to thank you so much for coming on to Health Styles today. This is such important work. Is there any closing remarks you'd like to make to our listeners? Did I lose you?
Okay, I'm back.
Oh,
Dana?
Okay. I think we lost her. Well, Kenya, what about you? So, any closing thoughts?
Oh, I just want to thank Dana for joining us and for sharing her insight regarding what we can actually do in medicine to once and for all, you know, put an end to racial inequality in healthcare. Her book is just pivotal. It is going to shape the new landscape of healthcare. And it's going to definitely offer opportunities for more people to, you know, explore what their implicit biases are and to actually do something about it. And I think that's the crux of this, that more people, as a result of her work, will be more mindful and more intentional and really align their explicit desires with their implicit thoughts. And go ahead.
And again, 212-209-2950. You've probably got a minute left to get this book, Just Medicine, A Cure for Racial Inequality in American Healthcare. But most importantly, please call and support this station, WBAI, by calling 212-209-2950. $50 for a membership and the book, Just Medicine, A Cure for Racial Inequality in American Healthcare. Or ask the person on the phone about other premiums if you'd like a different kind of premium. Again, 212-209-2950, WBAI.org. You can go to make a donation online. I want to thank you, Kenya. It's a pleasure working with you. Your commitment to the issue of reducing, ending racial and ethnic disparities in healthcare and socioeconomic disparities in healthcare is so important, and I'm so glad you're bringing this program onto HealthCetera. We think this is a great service to our listenership. So thank you so much for all that you're doing on WBAI.
Oh, Diana, my pleasure. Thank you. And have a great afternoon.
And you've been listening to HealthCetera on WBAI 99.5 FM New York. I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of this program that's brought to you by the Center for Health, Media, and Policy at Hunter College, City University of New York. You can follow us online at www.healthmediapolicy.com. That's healthmediapolicy.com. Thanks for tuning in, and please support listener-sponsored WBAI by calling 212-209-2950. Have a great afternoon.